And I will ask Brian if he'll lead the Pledge of Allegiance since he is there with the flag.
Yes, ma'am. Those of you who are in the room, please stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and now if Brian and Jeff will explain some of the technical things about this meeting. And one thing I can tell, and from having been on Zoom, like when we're trying to say the pledge together, it's not traveling at the same speed, so it doesn't come out together. So if you're not getting called on or something, just know that things aren't like being in the same room.
There's a lag time.
Yeah.
Yes, Madam Chair. Jeff Gray, would you go ahead and give us some of the technical procedures?
Yes, sir. Just some housekeeping so that we can get everybody connected and everything. I think it's gone pretty well, and we do have members of the public who are able to view us right now on YouTube streaming. So everything's going out online. We've checked that, and it's going well. All the virtual attendees are manually moved into the active space where they can participate. So this, I know some of you may have seen some news about Zoom bombing, as they're calling it, where people just sort of interrupt a meeting. We have procedures in place to prevent that, so you can't get in and say anything unless you're actually admitted to the room. So we've taken care of that. The presentation today, aside from the videos you see on the screen, will only include a live video there and what's on our screen here. We don't have a room video where we're actually at right now, so there's no view of the internal room. If you are presenting remotely and you need your slides advanced, this is more for staff. I'll take care of that for you. Just say next slide, please. And the raise hand feature, as we had talked about when we were going through setup, is very handy to alert the chair that you want to either interject or be recognized or called on. It's a feature right there at the bottom of your participants panel. And if you're on the iPad for the first time, you'll need to go to the App Store and download that, but I think we're past that. Everybody's already in, so we're good there. If you have any background noise, we do expect some of that. Zoom audio, of course, is overwhelmed with the homeschoolers and so forth, so there is a little bit of quality that is lost with that many people on. So if you hear a scratchy noise or white noise in the background, we'll do our best to diminish it, but it is kind of here for the long term. The meeting, again, like I said, streamed on YouTube. We've got that taken care of. And email instructions on that same page where the public is able to see the meeting. There are instructions there on how to send in something for an unagended item under the here the audience portion or any agended item. Those will come in and be handed to Brian to interject at the time he feels best. But we do have a way for the public to participate via email, and that has been posted online. With that, I'll give it back to Brian.
Okay. Madam Chair, now I'd like our general counsel to, on the record, state under what authority we're conducting this meeting.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members, Grant Lassert, general counsel. Today we are meeting through remote technology in order to do our part to comply with the county's and the governor's stay-at-home order and to meet CDC guidelines for social distancing necessitated by the COVID-19 situation. Governor DeSantis waived the requirement of local agencies to have a physical quorum present for the transaction of public business at public meetings. This was pursuant to Executive Order 20-69 issued on March 20th, 2020. Jeff has already mentioned that to guarantee the public's ability to participate, which is required by law, we've provided the WebEx login information in the notice of this meeting. The notice also provided an email address for members of the public to email questions relevant to today's meeting. If we get such questions, we will ask the chair's permission to read them and respond to them. Also, a little bit of housekeeping. To ensure as smooth a meeting as possible, given the time lag and the technology we're using, I recommend we follow Robert's Rules of Order for recognition by the chair very carefully. This means that if any board member or staff member wants to ask a question or make a comment, that individual should ask for recognition by the chair. For example, I'll pick on Director Van Meter. If Director Van Meter wants to ask a question or make a comment, she would say, "Madam Chair, this is Director Van Meter. I would like to be recognized." You allow a little bit of a time lag, and then the chair would say, "Director Van Meter, you are recognized and you have the floor." and then Director Van Meter could proceed. Once we come to the end of an agenda item, Madam Chair, I would recommend that you go down the list of board members and ask if any of them have a question or comment prior to voting, or if it's not an action item, moving on to the next agenda item.
Okay.
Thank you.
So hopefully that takes care of technical things. And if we go to item C, approval of the agenda, do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Jean Van Meter, I make the motion to approve the agenda.
Do I have a second?
Director Ortega, I second it.
All in favor say aye, and I guess at this point I should probably call roll.
Yes.
Ethel Urbina?
Here.
And you approve that motion?
Yes.
And Jeannie made it, so, and Manny seconded it, so, and Ray Hemphill?
I approve.
All right. Then going to item D, awards and presentations. Because of how irregular this meeting is, we have moved that to May's meeting. And we're now to hear the audience. Do we have any notes or comments or anything from an audience member thus far?
Madam Chair, if you would just allow for about 5-10 seconds to make sure that we don't.
And to be clear, that's from the general public watching the meeting.
Correct.
And Madam Chair, it doesn't appear that we do.
All right. Item F, the consent agenda. Do I have a motion regarding it?
Director Ortega, I make a motion to accept the consent agenda.
Director Van Meter seconds.
All right, then roll call, Ethel Urbina?
Here.
And you approve the consent agenda?
Yes, I do.
Ray Hemphill?
I approve.
And Manny and Jeannie had made the motion and seconded it, so I assume you two are approving it?
Yes. I will vote for it, yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I forgot to vote the first go-round, so I voted, and I agree with this one, too. And tag me on for the approval of the agenda motion up there.
Let the record show that both were unanimous.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay, we have no public hearing. Informational presentations. Old business, we have none. New business, the approval of temporary enhancement to the Good Neighbor Fund.
Yes, Madam Chair, Susan Poston's Vice President of Customer Service is going to tell you a little bit about this item, but this is a tool that we have used in the past when our community has been faced with difficult economic circumstances. And with that, I'll turn it over to Susan. Can we unmute Susan? Susan?
Yes, I'm here. Can you open the agenda item, please? So while they're doing that, obviously there's no need to present a whole lot of information about the challenging situation that we're in right now. A lot has changed even since this agenda item was drafted. So we use the Good Neighbor Fund to assist customers that are experiencing difficulty. And our proposal is to double our KUA match for the Good Neighbor Fund from today through June 30th. As Brian mentioned, we've done this at least twice before in 2006 when we had record high natural gas prices, and in 2010 when we had record cold weather. These funds, as you know, go to the Council on Aging for distribution to those in need, along with they utilize the LIHEAP funds that they also have to assist customers. At an estimated cost of $9,000, we present this recommendation to increase $1 for every dollar contributed to the Good Neighbor Fund between April 1st through June 30th, 2020, resulting in a $2 KUA match for all donations.
And going along with this, when I looked at this and knowing what the economic situation is in our community, I started trying to come up with other ways that we could help our ratepayers. And I was looking at the things that we sponsor that will obviously be called off. And got to asking questions about, could we pull some of that money and give it to the Good Neighbor Fund? Not things that are ongoing, like our scholarships and that kind of stuff. So Brian got busy and came up with a little over $50,000 that we could not issue because it can't be used right now. You can't have the activities that we're sponsoring. And that would make a sizable difference to the Council on Aging, to be able to help our community. And it would also help the people at KUA trying to figure out finance agreements and how people can meet their bills, to have the knowledge that there is an option there with some money to stretch a little further. So I don't know, how do I amend the recommendation, or what do we do at this point?
Madam Chair, you've got Mayor Alvarez with this.
Yes.
Center. Yeah, so Madam Chair, just so you guys can know, we in the city, out of our contingency fund of the commission, we give $25,000 to the Parks and Recreation Board to be used for grants for the events that we do in the city, in the park, for nonprofits that do events. We moved that funding, since there's no events for the Forsaken Future, and we moved that funding to the new program we rolled out yesterday, the rental assistant, which Council on Aging runs that program for us. So we added that funding from that part of Parks and Recreation for the event to the program of rental assistance. So I will guess that it will be a good idea, if this board will want to do that, to do the same, take that funding and move it over to assist those customers that need help.
This is Jean Van Meter, and I move that we amend the motion to, I don't know what the wording would be, but to be able to do that. Can I lawyer, our lawyer, please explain that to us, how it would read?
What you would do is you would move to approve the temporary enhancement to Good Neighbor Fund campaign along with staff's guidelines, with the additional funding from sponsorships that are not sponsorship events that have been that were slated for funding that are not taking place.
And Counselor, in addition to that, to get to the roughly $50,000, in addition to those events that aren't taking place, it would be the sponsorship dollars and some of the advertising funds that we would have ordinarily used during those events. That's how we get to the $50,000. So if you can capture that and clarify the motion one more time for me.
Excellent.
Redo the motion so that it becomes more understandable for all of us to vote on?
Absolutely. So, Madam Chair, if you want to move the following, you hereby move that to approve staff's recommendation with the amendment that recommendation will be supplemented with funds previously dedicated for KUA sponsorships for events and advertising that are not taking place.
I move acceptance of the
just whatever. What I said.
Do I have a second?
I second.
This is direct.
Any discussion?
Yes. Director Otega, I got a question on the motion. Well, not questions, probably some comments. I don't know if anyone has an answer. Do we know if the Council on Aging, they have a criteria for the folks that are eligible for these funds? Are they taking a look at this because of the unusual circumstances we have now? But we have a lot of folks now probably that normally don't have a problem paying their bills and so forth, but now they do. If anyone knows that, are they changing their guidelines on who's eligible? And the second part, and probably Susan could answer it, is the Good Neighbor funds. If we're going to enhance, it's going to be a lot more money involved. When folks are having problems paying this bill, and we recognize that, are we telling them that we have this fund that they're eligible for, to see if they are eligible for them? In other words, a lot of folks don't know that we have this fund. And because of the circumstance, I think we should pass that this fund is available to anyone at all that's having a problem and give them the point of contact and so forth.
Manny, I can respond to a little of that. Yes, we use that fund all the time. It's administered through the Council on Aging, which is wonderful. We don't have to try to evaluate who needs the money worse. Council on Aging does. And they're looking at the whole case of the person. They can hook them up with the housing or food or whatever. So they would definitely investigate and come up with a solid recommendation about who gets it, how much they get, and all of that.
Madam Chair, the mayor has a question.
Yes.
Yeah, it more or less is a statement. Council on Aging has a way to be able to go through that process and figure out the ones that really need it and more or less see if it's someone that's just trying to take advantage of the system or not. So I trust Council on Aging on the program that they have, and their staff is equipped and they know how to handle this type of process.
I have a question. Our Good Neighbor Fund is a one-time only contribution. Are we going to change that? Because this is going to go on for more than 1 month.
Director Van Meter, the staff recommendation is that we increase the KUA contribution for a period of 3 months.
Okay.
This is through June.
And the rest of that we're putting in the pot would be a one-time thing. But
oh, I see where it says it's okay.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? I think Jeannie made the motion.
No, I made the motion to amend it, and I think we need to vote on the amendment.
Do yes. we have a
you
second?
Need a second.
I second it. Director okay. Rubina seconds.
Okay, then all in favor, Ethel?
Aye.
Jeannie?
Aye.
Manny?
Yes.
Ray?
Aye.
And me, yes. So that's unanimous. So we've approved the amendment. Am I correct? Now we need to approve the recommendation?
No,
exactly.
The recommendation was amended. The recommendation okay. included what was already recommended and was supplemented according to the motion. So you're good.
And Susan, while we've got you there, can you give me some information if I want to make a donation? Who would I send it to? How would I earmark it to be sure it gets into the Good Neighbor Fund? Is it tax deductible? What?
Certainly. Yes, it is tax deductible. And you can actually just go to KUA.com to make that donation. Or if anyone has questions, they can certainly call us at customer service, which is 407-933-9800. And just to elaborate a little bit about the Good Neighbor Fund, we do not put restrictions on the Council on Aging on how they distribute those funds. The LIHEAP funds have very strict rules on who they can distribute those to. But the Good Neighbor Funds, we do not put any restrictions on the Council on Aging. We leave that to their expertise.
I feel like by making some donations to that, we help KUA in the long run, our neighbors in the short run, and it's a win-win situation, that's for sure.
Good idea, Kathleen.
Thank you. Okay, staff report.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Larry Mattern, Vice President of Operations, to come with his semi-annual report.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just the semi-annual report of the relatively new department operations.
He probably needs to come
closer to the microphone or something.
How about now?
That's better.
Okay, the duties that your operations department does, we actually run the operations, but we also have joint action agencies that we oversee on behalf of KUA. And one of those is Florida Gas Utility, and all the joint action agencies we deal with have to do with keeping our rates low and competitive so that we can help out every day, and then especially in these times. Florida Gas Utility manages the gas that we use. We actually, KUA owns some of the gas transportation, and that is managed for FMPA to send to our power plants. The most recent thing Florida Gas Utility has done is we found a method of getting prepaid gas, and we go over a long contract. And what this has done, unlike hedging where you get a price of gas and if the bottom falls out, you're stuck at a high price, this is as a deduction of anywhere up to 30 cents on the gas that you buy every day. And the gas right now is $1.76, I think it was today. It's very cheap. But 30 cents off that, that's a big amount. And even if gas gets to $4 or $5, we're still getting our 30-cent discount. So that's what FGU's done positive for us lately. Okay. And FMPA, what they're doing with our generation, not only is your folks at the power plant keeping it available, they're selling our excess capacity because of these sales to places like Reedy Creek and other communities. We're able to, again, take that, the money we profit. It keeps our units running, so we're getting all the capability out of them, and it also lowers our price. Florida Municipal Power Pool, what we're doing there now, we're optimizing and what machines run with natural gas that much cheaper and coal a little more expensive. We're coming up with methods of running the most efficient units that we can at the lower cost, and that's another way to keep the rates down. And, of course, then the operations department is what we're doing here every day. So your power supply portion, what they're doing with the four units down at Kane Island, this is their availability factor. That's when it's on. If we're not on, we're not getting that savings. And the red dotted line there is a national average. So it's about an 85% natural average of how available units are. And for the last 2 years, we're well above that average. So they're doing a great job down there. And you've given us a goal, you, the board, have given us a goal to stay 5% below the large units, the large utilities at FMPA on availability. As you see, we're even with our rough summer we had last year with the lightning, we're still below that. So the folks are doing a good job there. So I'm getting ready to come to outages. In Kane Island, Unit 3, the transformer, we had, as you can see, the puff of white smoke there. That was a lightning arrestor. Blew up on there and also damaged a bushing. That was an unplanned outage. And what that unplanned outage did for us is the next week we had a planned outage on Unit 3. So it moved our outage up a week earlier. We got very lucky that week. The temperatures were in the 80s, and the following week, as you well know, we just came out of a week of 90s. So that we had the unit back on. The other thing, when you see here, what you see in this photograph here is the folks up on top in the green device, that's substation maintenance. That's our linemen there on the ground. We also had our relay techs there, and we had our SCADA folks and, of course, our operational people at Kane Island. The whole department pulled together to turn this thing around in days rather than in weeks. We didn't have to pay for cranes from the outside. So the operations department in this particular case showed that as one department, here's an opportunity to show that it does really work well together. Maintenance and upgrades. We're still storm hardening. This particular picture here is where they're taking wood poles, taking wires from wood poles and putting them over on concrete poles. And that gives us, actually saves us money in the long run, too, as we have to inspect the wood poles and replace them a little sooner than the others. And also they take the opportunity to put new cables up there and new wiring. And we do underground, too, but that's much higher in the cost to do that. But we are pulling the existing underground in and still putting more in. And the big story, I guess, what you to bring us up to date, what are we doing during the COVID-19 crisis and what we're doing to the operational changes? So what we've done is, as you see in that photograph, that you have trucks sitting at one of our switch yards. You say, well, why are they there? We actually set up there. It's not just there to go work. We've taken the crews and we sent them out to the different areas, and then they'll come in and stagger to get their equipment in the morning, or they'll get their equipment for the next day that evening before they quit. The crews that we have, we keep the same two guys in each truck. So if one gets infected, we just lose one truck team. So that's what we're doing with the folks there. We're keeping the separation that way. We are up at full strength right now. I know you've seen yesterday that there might, you know, the next 2 weeks could be rough. We're going into this full strength in the entire department right now. We are still doing construction. Last month's new meter construction was the highest we've seen in 2 years, believe it or not. Whether they were racing to the finish line to get things done, we'll see next month if we're affected by this or not. But we still have more orders coming in for construction. So at this point, since we're full strength, we're still participating in the construction and everything almost business as usual, other than keeping the folks apart. And they know to keep away from our customers to a safe distance. The good thing about this is people really need electricity today, and they want the confidence and see that we're out there. The more visible we are out there, and we're doing our work, we're not just becoming visible, the more confidence the folks have. We have electricity. We're at home. We need to have this. And so they see a good presence of that's out there. Our administrative staff, we have folks rotating a couple days here, a couple days at home. Some with children may be at home more. Everything's working fine. You know, as Jeff is making this happen, everything happens with our computers at home. We're not missing a beat on that. System ops, same two people together all the time that we have in our emergency control center, or energy control center, should I say. We have the same two folks there. So if we lose one, we lose a team, we'll start paying overtime. On them and on our operations down at Kane Island, the same thing. The operators there, we've closed the control room to only operators only. Same thing here in this building, operators only in our control center, so we don't have the folks coming in and out of there. Relay and SCADA, they spread out, go to separate substations and go straight to the jobs. They don't have to come and set up. Meter shop, we have two to truck, two, you lose one. And they're getting a lot of meters put in and also taking advantage while the businesses are down. We're switching from residential in a large way and going to the businesses because this is the time they can have their power turned off through the day for the short amount of time we change the meters out. So we're taking that opportunity. Our engineering staff, they're going straight to meet the customer when they can, rather than us milling back and forth in the building or come from their house and go there. So again, we're keeping the distance, but the work's still going on. Power supply, I've already told you that we're staggering there. Sub maintenance, two to a truck, going to separate substations. So that's how we're set up. We're keeping the distance. We're full power. We have fallback plans. If worse comes to worse, we could have everything from having half a set of workers stay home with pay while we have the other half here and then switch them out, you know, and keeping the folks at home there. And the very worst, and I hope we don't get to that, I don't think we will, would be sequestering in our control rooms where we have 24-hour operation where we may have to just keep who's there. And we are set up to bring food in. We have refrigerators and the whole deal to bring food into them. And we have air mattresses if they would have to be there. So that's what we've done for the COVID-19 right now. And right now we're in really good shape. And things could change, but right now you can feel confident we're in good shape. And with that, if it clicks to the next one, it would just say, are there any questions?
Anybody have a question?
Good report.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. It's
very much.
Great y'all are so prepared for whatever may happen. Going on to the budget.
Yes, Madam Chair. Today's meeting includes the preliminary staffing in capital, and it's staff's best recommendation for capital and staffing for the five-year planning horizon. While it's impossible for us to ignore the health and economic crisis our country and community is currently in, what we can't afford to do is ignore the planning process. In a moment of crisis, our community needs us to be able to count on us for having electricity to meet their needs. This requires continuous planning, in many cases years prior to being needed. This capital budget includes no recommendation for staffing level increases for the planning period. The recommended FY21 capital budget is approximately $23 million, just shy of that, which represents roughly $3.5 million reduction over the current fiscal year. And here to provide you with a more in-depth overview of the capital budget is Vice President Kevin Crawford.
Thank you, Brian. Madam Chair and Board, good afternoon. As Brian has mentioned to you, you know, we don't obviously know what the impacts will be financially, and as Larry shared with you earlier, how we're adapting operationally to the situation. We are financially also in a position to be prepared for the outcomes that might befall us, and it largely thanks to the leadership of this board, and I'll go into some detail about that in a moment. As KUA over the years is no stranger to incidences of emergency and emerging conditions, and the board historically has seen fit to provide reserves for situations that are, you know, that are similar to what we are having to face currently. And so with that information, I wanted to go into a little bit of detail before we jumped into the budget and provide you some assurance and give you some information about financially how KUA is positioned to weather an incidence, you know, like we're facing. So a couple of things that the board has implemented throughout the years and that we currently have is obviously we have a customer deposit policy, and this is established to minimize the impact of customers who walk away from their debt and aren't able to pay that. And currently we have a balance in that of about $16 or $17 million. And those are funds that can be exclusively applied, because that's their legal purpose, to customer deposits and defaulted bills. And so that is one of the means by which we can mitigate the impact financially. Self-insurance fund, we talked about this. It's interesting. You know, we've looked at these in the past few years because several years in a row now we've had to think about reserves with the storms events that we've encountered. And so you're no strangers to this information. Our self-insurance fund currently has a balance of about $15 million, and that is exclusively in the event of weather or other disasters that KUA has to manage fiscally. We are also, by the board's directive, required to maintain 1.5 months of fixed O&M. Now, that's exclusive of fuel. So for things like salaries and other items that have to be paid as fixed O&M costs, we maintain a balance, and I think currently that is around $5 million. Our rate stabilization fund is, we've talked about at length in here, is to delay and minimize any rate increases for our customers. Currently, the balance in that fund is about $32 million. And then our reserve for future capital outlay, this is used for unforeseen major capital, like, for instance, the escalation of the Neo City substation that we brought to you a couple years back. But it can be used for all other purposes as approved by the Board of Directors. And currently that balance is $9.3 million. So with the exception of the customer deposit policy, these are self-governed by the board designations that, depending on circumstances as they present themselves and as the financial impacts of this unforeseen event do become real, the board has some flexibility to maneuver and to pivot financially to address those concerns. And so before we got into the budget, we just felt like it was incumbent upon us to share with you, the board, some of the ways that KUA is approaching this situation with some confidence financially. If no specific questions regarding that, Madam Chair, I will move forward with the, as we talk about the budget specifically and how that timeline will work out for us.
Do I see any questions? Seeing none, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So today, April 1st, we are bringing to you, as Brian mentioned, the preliminary budget meeting. This is our overview of the process where we talk about how this all happens. We're going to talk about the rates forecast. The capital and staffing components are also would be presented today. Then the budget review meeting that is in June 3rd, or on June 3rd, we will talk about the O&M side. So today you'll see capital and staffing, and then you'll see O&M, and those are the big three components of our budget. Then July 1st, we will have the budget public hearing to adopt the budget as the board sees fit to do so. We also have a backup date on August 5th in the event that there is a second meeting required for a public hearing. And this enables us to meet the City of Kissimmee's charter to establish the budget 45 days prior to the new fiscal year. And then the new fiscal year is October 1st, and we will begin then the implementation of the budget that you adopt for 2021. So what we'll talk about with you this afternoon is an overview of the budgeting process. I'll provide that with you today. We'll talk a little bit about our load forecast and how that informs the budget. I'll talk to you about how we develop the capital and staffing and the 2021 budget with projections for 2022 through 25. So last year, the board asked us to look ahead 5 years when we do our budget presentation and under Brian's direction. That's what we do now. So that gives you an idea of looking ahead projection-wise, what we think the numbers will look like. And then after that, we are changing it up just a little bit today, given the extraordinary circumstances. And rather than have each vice president come and present a specific presentation to you, which we historically do, they are queued up. Their presentations are ready to go. But rather than have them come up one by one or share one by one, for the sake of expediency, we ask that if you have a specific question for a specific VP, we will bring them up and we can drill down as deep as you want to go. But for the sake of time, we were not going to have them share their specific presentations, given the fact that, you know, the data is all in the budget document. You are all well traveled on this road in terms of what we do every year for budget. And so if you have specific questions, then we would definitely make as much time for those as you have as the board. Then moving on to the HR side, on the staffing, Cindy Herrera, our VP of Human Resources, will come after me and present the staffing additions, deletions, and reorganizations that we foresee for the next fiscal year, any market level adjustment recommendation for planning, and any departmental details, again, by the vice presidents as directed by the board. So if you have a question on staffing or their org charts or anything of that nature, then we would ask them to come to discuss that with you, the board, as at any length that you require. Moving into our load forecast, this kind of is sort of the linchpin as we move into the budget development process. We work with FMPA, as Larry mentioned them earlier, to prepare a load forecast, and it's an iterative process. They do a base model, and they project electric sales growth based on the metrics and the econometric models that they use. Then we discuss with them, and we all kind of meet and sit down, and we had a couple of conference calls with them, and they ask us questions that are specific to KUA, what type of solar penetration do you see, and different things of that nature. So they don't just throw us a number and we plug it into the model. We talk back and forth about it, and it's an intelligent, informed conversation, so we're not accepting anything de facto, but we do work with them, and the process, again, is iterative, so that we can come up with what we all feel is a confident model to integrate into our financial planning forecast. And so we formulate that. Again, the reason this is important is obviously it drives our revenue forecast for the next fiscal year. It also helps us understand our transmission distribution expansion, what kind of substations we'll need to buy, to construct. Generation planning for ARP. Do we have enough fuel and purchase power the next year? We need to build by our contract for anything of that nature. And then any staffing requirements that might be necessary to support that load forecast based on what we need. So for FY 2021, this is the magic numbers here. And I'll show you where we were historically, and I'll show you these. This is sort of the punchline at this point. The customer growth number we anticipate is about 2.3%. for 2021, based on our best judgment using the FMPA model, and 1.3% electric sales growth. And you'll see for some time that hasn't been a one-to-one correlation. So for every customer you get 1%, you don't get a commensurate 1% increase in sales growth or in KWH sales growth. And lots of reasons for that, but you know, that's typically what we have seen in the previous years. So that's kind of where we are in terms of building our forecast with customer growth and electric sales growth. I'll go into a little bit of detail historically with KUA for the past 5 years. You can see that progressively, we are in a very good position compared to many of our peers in the state and even in the industry. Kissimmee has positive growth. We still have room for growth in the service territory. We've experienced rapid growth from 69,000 to almost 10,000 more customers between 2015 to 2019. And that's an extraordinary position for us to be in as a utility. Again, some municipalities and electric utilities, our sisters in the state, some facing negative growth in their service territories. And so we're quite happy to be able to be in that position. Additionally, our sales growth has increased over the past 5 years. And you can see, you know, again, very positive numbers. And the exception to 16 and 17, 16 was a strong weather year, and so it's a bit of an anomaly in that graph. But you'll see progressively an increase of sales growth over that same period of time. This capital overview is a graphical illustration of what I'll get into some detail numerically on the next couple of slides. I will preface this by saying none of us know, obviously, what the financial impact of this current situation will be. But we do, based on our best estimates and based on what we currently look at in the model, this capital plan that we're bringing to you does fall exactly on target and in line with our historical and our most recent projections for being able to be funded according to our plan and according to the board's established policies, which are those things we brought to you last year, like paying down commercial paper, not having rate increases, and those types of things. And we'll get into more detail of that when we bring in our O&M budget, which kind of sews all of this together. But as a board member, you may be asking, well, I'm looking at this capital budget, can we afford it? And to give you some assurance, as we move through our models, this all looks completely doable from a financial standpoint at the current moment. And as that does change, and we all expect that some things will change, but as those do manifest, we will adapt and modify and bring you back further recommendations for anything that we see on the horizon. But as we currently sit, this is a healthy, fundable capital program. You can see that the biggest components in the program, obviously, the AMI is the yellow bar you see there. Those are rollover. Those are pre-funded. And so we have reserves that we funded in prior years to pay for those projects. Anything that doesn't get done as a rollover from 19 or into 20, which is already funded, will roll into 21. And to draw your attention to the big blue lines that you see there, that's the vast bulk of our infrastructure. It's our infrastructure for operations. And that's a reinvestment in our system. It enhances the reliability that our customers have come to expect from KUA, and which they have a right to expect. And so we take that very seriously. And as you can see, we put our money exactly where it needs to be, which is into the health and maintenance of our system. You recall that last year, Brian had asked us as staff to look into and to prioritize our capital budgets. And just kind of to refresh your memory on that, the item A's or category A were those items that were essential due to regulatory or contractual obligations. These are basically mandates. These are things that we consider we have to do either by law or by some compliance requirement. And these are somewhat non-negotiable from an external standpoint that we are required to do. Category B are those that are essential to maintaining our current level of service, things like expansion or maintenance activities on lines. And lastly, the category C are those items that enhance current level of service. So we've got essential due to regulatory, we've got essential due to maintaining, and we've got those items that we enhance or current level of service or customer experience. And those are the items that may not be necessary from a compliance standpoint or a maintenance standpoint, but things that we feel are important nonetheless, but perhaps a lesser category of importance than the prior two items of A and B. So moving into the summary of the capital, and this gives you how those capital dollars, and Brian mentioned to you the $22.9 million FY 2021 capital budget, how that breaks out by category. You can see that we have about $590,000 in the A category, and those are items that relate to compliance, obviously. Those items essential to maintaining our current level of service is about $22 million. And those items are level C, enhancing our customer current customer level of service. Those are about $422,000. So the vast bulk of those fall into those things that we are utilizing to maintain our customer service levels. And then this gives you the breakdown by department, and you can see the lion's share of that, obviously, within the operations group, the $30.3 million, and the consequent breakdown by each of the other departments in there for the total of $31.1, and that's the gross number. And then so you net in against that all of the contributions and capital that come from the various sources, FMPA, their contribution to the capital projects at Kane Island and the capital work there, and any other contributed capital that we're doing, the line upgrade at Kane Island, and then there's a transmission line that we're moving downtown in conjunction with the city of Kissimmee. And so when you factor those funding sources in, you net that $8.2 million against the $31 million total capital, and that gets you to the $22.9 million that Brian mentioned to you in his opening remarks. And then you can see out again the projected horizon. That can all change, obviously, but for now, those are our projections for the 5 years that we're looking at ahead. That was all of the portion of my presentation related to capital, Madam Chair. Again, the vice presidents are on standby to address any questions that you have as the board. Before I ask Cindy to come up, I will pause, Madam Chair, and see if there are any questions on the floor.
Does anybody have a question of a specific VP or a general question for Kevin?
I have a question. We have a large growth factor, it looks like. Is this good growth, or is this going to be low income growth where it might cause us some problems as far as billing?
Madam Chair, if I may, thank you for that question. You know, KUA, 87% of our customers are residential. So the vast majority of that new customer growth, if it follows previous trends, will be on the residential side. And then about 58% of our revenues are from those residential customers. So they contribute a lot larger component of individual meters than they do in actual terms of revenue. Given the current situation, we don't know. It's still difficult to tell what the impacts will be, but it's possible that residential customers could feel that impact to a more significant degree, and that may have an impact on revenues. We're monitoring those numbers every day. We're looking at uncollectibles and how they compare to previous years, and we are monitoring cash flows. You know, there are a couple of components. It's not just the sales that we're looking at, but also the collectability of those sales. It's an excellent question that I wish I had a better answer for, but it's something that we're looking at to see how this could impact those residential customers.
Well, we know there's going to be some impact. We just don't know exactly what it's going to be.
That's correct. Yes, ma'am.
And my concern has been more the large commercial customers, because we get a whole lot of our revenue from large commercial. So we certainly have to hope that all the businesses that are closed right now will get open quickly and start needing electricity, including the school system.
Yes, ma'am. That's absolutely correct, Madam Chair. We are working very closely with Susan's group and customer service to monitor that revenue stream and how those customers are specifically being affected. But we will keep a close eye. And again, as the information becomes available to us, we will certainly share that with the board and any impacts that we perceive that could happen.
I have a question.
Another question?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Jose?
Yeah, so, Kevin, I know we stopped disconnections. Where are we on loss of funding from disconnections?
Mr. Mayor, I think our president is going to address that question.
Jose, the situation has somewhat improved from Monday. Monday, we had a little over 1,200 customers who were eligible for disconnection, representing an outstanding balances of about $350,000. I don't have the updated numbers right in front of me, but I know we are now, as of today, we're a little under $300,000. So some folks have made some payments.
Brian, have we put a date when we're going to stop that, or are we just leaving it open until we get rid of this pandemic that we have.
Effect of the day will be extending the suspension on services connections until further notice.
Okay.
I think Ethel had something to say.
Yes. Brian, I just want, Kevin, I'm sorry. I wanted to ask you, on the previous graph, where you showed the 5 years, I noticed that customer service is the one that has the most variable years, amounts between years. Is there any way that it can be normalized?
Director Urbina, the big discrepancy there was the AMI funding. Are you talking about the $19 million that you see in customer service and rollover?
No, I'm looking at the 58 versus 119 versus down to 31 and then back up to 100. And then
okay,
to
a good chunk of that is going to represent when vehicles are replaced.
Okay.
And then it's driven by some guidance tit a 10 and 100,000, I believe, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, it's just when vehicles are falling for replacement, Director Urbina.
Can we level it out?
Can we move some stuff out? Certainly, we can look at that to make it more smooth. Is that what?
I said a little bit.
Okay. Well, we can certainly take a look at that.
Replacing vehicles comes under customer service.
Thank you.
Well, they've got vehicles within that department, field services.
Vehicles for customer
service. That's correct.
That we're talking about.
That is correct.
Just another comment. I'm assuming that the residential sales are going to increase during these times because everyone, in my house, is going to increase by 100% with everything that's going on at the house. But I also could see an increase in defaults too, which could have an effect on the budget.
Yes, sir. Thank you. These are certainly, even notwithstanding the pandemic, our big sales months were in the next 3 to 4 months period. And so we see a significant portion of our sales of the year in these next months. But that could certainly have some impact. And if I may, to Director Urbina's question, the vehicles, even though they're scheduled to be purchased in those years, if they don't need to be replaced, because we look at them every year, and Susan, I think, actually pushed two vehicle replacements out to next year that she was going to make this year. So we do look at those every single year, and that's for planning purposes. But if they're still running and they don't meet our criteria, then we will defer those purchases.
Good question, Director.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, so we're ready to go on with personnel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the slides forward and bring up Cindy Herrera.
Great. Good afternoon. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for your presentation. So what I'm going to be covering today is the staffing on the personnel and human resources, actually overall of the organization. What you see in front of you is the current organizational chart that identifies the number of employees per department. So that is what you're looking at there. Next, manpower and position utilization data. Currently, our current authorized positions are 289 full-time equivalents. Our recommendation for fiscal year 21 is an adjustment of zero. So a recommendation of approval for 289 full-time equivalents. Okay, so no change there this coming fiscal year. For staffing, what you're looking at is a projection for planning purposes. This is subject to change. But currently, right now, as of today, there's no projected change in our staffing. So that's what you're seeing across the board there on that. Okay. Moving on into this slide here. So normally this is the time of year that we're in budgeting and projecting what we're looking at. But in our light of our current environment, at this time, staff is not making a market level adjustment recommendation for fiscal year 21 annual budget at this time. I can say in the coming months, I will work with finance as well as gather data from other agencies, as I normally do annually, and bring back to the board at a later time a recommendation. And not sure what that looks like. Right now, I can just say normally we would be, but because in light of this pandemic and what's going on, we're very sensitive to this and really want to make sure what we bring back to you, that everybody else, and financially, and working with finance and with Kevin and his team, that this is something that we can do because we understand the impact, but would be bringing this back to you later at a later date. And that's it for my presentation. Any questions?
Very good.
Good job.
Any questions, Madam Chair?
One thing, even if we can't figure this out before time to have the budget submitted and approved before it goes into effect, a board could always go back and amend a budget even after it's accepted, correct? I mean, if we can't figure out a market level increase before we finalize the budget, and by December everything's calmed down and we can see trends and what's happening, you could still amend a budget, couldn't you?
Madam Chair, this is Grant. You can amend the budget so long as you present it to the city by the deadline and meet the necessity that the budget go into effect October 1st.
Okay.
Those are two requirements. So there is a limited window for amending.
And Madam Chair, we are hoping that when we get the numbers on sales in April will be a good indicator for what we expect. We know we're going to see some reductions. I think that's fair to say, right, Kevin? For the current fiscal year, at least in the month of March, but we'll have a better feel hopefully next month.
If I might add one more thing to what I thank you, Mr. President. If I might add one more thing, Madam Chair, once the budget is adopted, I'm really talking about amending it before adoption. Once the budget goes into effect,
I'm talking about December,
yes.
Or January, or.
Sure, yes. The board has the authority after the budget goes into effect October 1st, provided they have sufficient funds to amend the budget to meet needs that weren't foreseen in the forecasting and the preparation of the budget. Yes.
And Madam Chair, if I may, this is Kevin again. The board has done that since my tenure here. I think last year, the year before, with the expansion that
line
we did,
extensions.
The line extensions, the board adopted a modified budget for that reason. And so you have done that before, and yes, ma'am, that is well within the board's authority to do that,
and
we will reflect that.
Any other questions about this? So we'll move on to the management review. And thanks to Cindy for all the good materials that we had to go with. And again, we know we're kind of doing it not how we'll do it in the future, but if we can put it together enough to evaluate Brian, then good. So any comments, or do we want to go around and be called on one at a time and make comments, or volunteer, or what?
The man has his hand up.
Yes.
Waving.
You know, and I'm throwing a guess there. I mean, Brian has done an excellent job. We're in the middle of a time right now that we've never seen before. And this board is able to just let his contract roll through the next year.
That's what I would like to do. I'd like to move that we keep him employed with us.
we don't even have to have a motion to do that. His contract will be renewed. And for my part, I've talked to Brian about all the materials we had, and I feel perfectly confident with saying everything looks great. So
I think we've all had a chance to one-on-one with Brian. He makes it very possible for all of us to be able to talk to him and express any concerns or even congratulations to him.
That's why, Madam Chair, I said what I said, because you don't really need a motion in reference to that. Just
we don't. Fine.
I just wanted to hear from the board to be sure that my thinking was everybody else's thinking and that we just say that we're all in agreement and we're happy to have Brian for the next year.
This Director, this Director Ortega, and I agree with what everyone said.
Okay.
This is Ethel, and I agree that Brian has done a great job this year, and we hope that he pulls through this new dynamic we have and shine.
Okay.
We will. We will together.
All right, then shall we move on to hear the attorney?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few items for you. Thankfully, in this very difficult time, I at least have a couple good news items. The state legislative session was very successful for us. None of the bills that we were concerned with, most notably House Bill 653, limiting transfers to the general fund, and the limitation, the expansion, or the evisceration of our sovereign immunity limits and liability, those bills died. And so it was a clean sweep for us, for our interests. And so I thank you again for all your help on making sure that that was the case. Some other good news is that in the recent stimulus package that was passed, LIHEAP funding was increased a great deal. That's a good segue into something else. There do seem to be some efforts among some federal staffers to put disconnect and collections moratoriums in place. There's talk of a 120-day moratorium on collections after the crisis is declared over. We just need to make sure to keep our delegation informed that please keep in mind that utilities, like especially the essential functions of utilities, need funds to meet operating expenses. So just be careful on what you don't allow us to do as we all get through this crisis. And that brings up, you know, perhaps a targeted relief. Folks are getting some help right now. If more help is going to be directed to folks that are suffering, maybe it makes sense to designate some of that for the payment of essential services like water and electric and natural gas, in addition to the other things that are already paid for. So we're just keeping APPA and FMEA and KUA are keeping our eyes on that. There is some indication that maybe FEMA funding will be available through the localities like Kissimmee, and I thank Mayor Alvarez for staying on top of this issue to help us meet operating expenses. So those are all things that we're looking at, but we're staying on top of that. And outside of that, I don't have anything else.
Okay. And Brian?
Nothing but a lot of appreciation and gratitude, both for the board and without a doubt the staff that made this such a wonderful year, top to bottom.
And thank you. And Mayor Alvarez.
Well, just wanted to give you guys, so as you guys, I don't know if you're aware, today finally the governor did a statewide stay-at-home order for almost 3 weeks. All the mayors have been asking him to do that. He left it up to the municipalities to do it themselves. Finally today he enacted it. It comes in effective on April the 3rd at midnight. What he did was he used some of the verbiage which actually the three attorneys, the two from the city and the two cities and the county, are trying to decipher the verbiage because it wasn't too clear. We look at it and it looks very, very close to what we have, and as long as we stay in the same guideline, we're able to keep ours. And it'll be the good thing, it'll be a statewide. And that was the biggest issue we had. So we had Orange County and Osceola with a stay-at-home order, but Seminole County and Polk County did not have. So people were traveling, going to events, gatherings in Seminole and Polk County, and then coming back to Kissimmee or Orlando. And so we continue to pressure the governor as mayors. And finally today, out of the blue, he didn't even give us a heads up. He went ahead and enacted the order. Just want to give you guys an update what we have in Osceola County. We have 115 cases of the virus. There's 36 people that are in the hospital right now in serious condition. Unfortunately, one person already died 2 days ago. He was a 58-year-old male here in Osceola County. Statewide, we have a total of 6,955 cases. 890 are hospitalized, and 87 death in the state of Florida. Right now, we're ranked fifth in the United Nations with the most cases. We know that as we get more tests done, there's going to be higher numbers. We had today an executive management meeting at the Center, and what we got is they gave us a review of when we expect the middle peak of this problem, and we're looking at somewhere in the middle of May, and that will be the middle peak of the problem. That's how they're looking at it, looking at other states that have had this issue. So we look at this as unfortunately it's going to last longer than we thought. We're hoping that people understand that staying home is the best thing to do because we carry this ourselves. One of the things we asked the governor, and he has not done it, is that he closes the state. We're still getting a lot of people coming in through the Amtrak train, and they're coming from up north. The other day I was in downtown, and I saw the train. It must have been like 30 people that got off the train with suitcases. These are people that are coming here from up north in the train. They're not traveling in planes anymore. They're traveling through the train. And so all the mayors are asking the governor to do a shutdown in the state of Florida where we don't allow anyone else from the outside to be coming in here that could be bringing this virus. As you guys know, we have a cruise line, Argentinian cruise line that's in the coast of Florida that wants to come in through Fort Lauderdale. We believe the governor is going to give them permission to come in. Half of that ship, they're all contaminated. And so
the governor's told them no, by the way.
Well, I can tell you that decision has not been exactly made yet. They're still negotiating, and we're on top of it. We're trying to make sure to let them know that we don't want that ship to come here. They left while we were in the middle of this problem, and now they're coming back, all of them sick. But at least he finally pulled the trigger and enacted an order throughout the entire state. That's one thing. And so I know that Mayor Demings was supposed to speak today at 4. I lost his meeting. He was actually going to speak on behalf of that. We're still going to push the governor to close the state of Florida. We still have planes arriving from New York. We still have planes arriving from California. And so our thought of mine is we need to shut the state of Florida and make sure that we can stop this virus before it continues to spread. So people have been listening to the order we have. We haven't had any issues with law enforcement. And so people are hearing, but we're still seeing a lot of people out in the street that we don't believe that they should be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ethel?
No comments.
Manny?
No, everyone stay safe out there.
Jeannie?
Nope, just stay safe.
Ray?
I'll echo the same thing. Everybody stay safe and well.
I've got a couple of things. First of all, we put off the workshop dealing with the management review in the future. Something like that to me is so much easier to do when we're sitting talking around the table. That would just be really difficult to put together like this.
Absolutely.
Next month, we've got coming up trying to do interviews for potential board members. I think I would find that equally as hard to do with this kind of a format. We have built in lots of extra time before we have to get our recommendation to the city for the city to accept it to have the person in place for October. I'm going to suggest that we put that off into the future, being sure we still have plenty of time to get it done, but I don't see a need to do it next month trying to handle it from this format.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
It's Grant. That's fine. I just want the board to be aware that pursuant to the charter, the Kissimmee City Commission must approve the appointment or make the appointment no less than 60 days prior to October 1st. So that means that the city must act no later than its last July meeting.
Okay.
So we'd want to be cognizant of giving the city enough time to look over the three nominees, if that's how many nominees we send over, to make their decision. So I don't know.
So we would have to do it the first meeting of July, or the only meeting of July, the first part of July.
May I suggest something? That we don't know what's going to be happening. In another month, we may be back in session again.
Right.
So let's just kind of put that on hold until we know what's going on. We're just so new into this. We're what?
But we
2 weeks and another probably month. So let's see what happens.
When we come up to where people are thinking they're going to be getting interviewed, we could certainly write them a letter and say, due to the situation, we're putting this off until we can actually have the board all in one place. And let them know how to access these meetings so they can get an idea of what goes on at a meeting and kind of do some prior learning and understand why they hadn't been called for an appointment.
Well, I think if worse comes to worse, we need to do it this type of thing. We can't put it off forever.
Well, we have to if we haven't been able to get anything together by July, absolutely. But
they know.
Hopefully another month we'll be able to go back. But if we can just kind of go with the idea it's a month-to-month decision as to when we can get the board actually in one place or when we have to do it this way based on the deadline.
This is Director Ortega. Grant, is it possible that if we need an extra month that through – we know the mayor of the city – So he might be able to assist us in getting maybe an extra month. I know it's a 60-day thing, but is that something because of the circumstances? Like everything else is being, could the city does something to say, the commission say, okay, we'll give you an extra. It's just a question. Yes, I'm in.
The only ones that can change the charter are the voters. The commission cannot change the charter. The mayor cannot change the charter.
Okay.
But so also, if also it comes down to the first July meeting and we haven't been able to get together, God forbid, we'll just suck it up and do it. But
we can always bring the people to the KUA and do exactly what we're doing here, and that we could interview them
one person
like we're talking
time.
Right now.
Well, Madam Chair, Director Van Meter. Arguably, our board members have the right to be here because we're an essential service. We're a government agency, and they're making decisions today. I don't know if it would be consistent with the county and the governor's order for other non-board members to come here in terms of social distancing and shelter in place.
So, can I give a suggestion?
Sure.
So the way we're looking at, we're going to have a full meeting of commission at the end of April. And the way we're looking at is we will be, the commission will be inside the chamber. We are going to set up a spot in the lobby of the Civic Center. And whoever wants to come and speak and to hear the audience or any of our items will be talking from the Civic Center in the area that we have them assigned. And it will be one people at a time that can go in and stand in front of the camera and make the questions or suggestions that they got to make. So, I mean, you guys can look at it on doing it that way, of having the applicants be in a separate place where they go in one at a time, and we're inside the chamber, inside the boardroom at KUA.
Good thing is we've got plenty of time. There can be lots of options, but right. I'm just kind of giving a heads up as to why we can easily not do it in April if we can't, in May, if we can't convene in May.
Madam Chair, it's Grant, that's true, and it sounds like we can make, with what the mayor said, we can make something work with Director Van Meter's suggestion. So
yeah,
we'll make it work.
Yeah.
Sure. If we can keep the electricity on, we can make this work.
Sure.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
And we will be in contact with the applicants just in case they had previously seen the board's timetable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
This is Director Hemphill. I also feel that we're accepting applications through, I think, about the 20th of April. Is that accurate?
Something like that, yes.
That anybody that has applied and does apply up until that time should be notified in advance that we will not be doing things as previously scheduled due to all the circumstances.
And notified as to how they can watch board meetings.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Then I will adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Stay well.
Bye.